Hi, my name is Carrie Tomey. I am 49 years old. Today is Monday, October 21st, 2019. We are in Dallas, Texas. My good friend is Josh Robertson, and we have been friends many years since high school. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Carrie.
Josh, I'm going to have you introduce yourself, too, please.
Hi, I'm Josh Robertson. I'm 46 years old. Mm-hmm. It's Monday, October 21st, 2019, and we're in Dallas, Texas. I'm here with my longtime buddy. We grew up in the same neighborhood in Northwest Fort Worth and went to high school together. Her name is Carrie Tomey.
I've remembered Josh from high school, and he was in the play Camelot. He was the little squire boy.
Sir Tom of Warwick.
Yes. And so then we became friends, and he was a skateboarder, and my good friend Gina and I used to drive him home from school, and we would all pack into the same car, and we would stop and get frozen yogurts, and he was just a little skater punk, and he had a little tail, like a hair tail.
A rat tail?
A rat tail.
Yeah, that was the style in the 80s for a minute.
Remember when I chopped it off?
So, Carrie, I think maybe one of the scariest moments that we've ever had together was when I just decided that I needed a new haircut, and I asked you to do it, and I don't think you wanted to do it, but you're such a accommodating friend that, you know, I think you shook the whole time when you did it. I think it was a nerve-wracking thing for you, and I should probably
traumatic.
I should have apologized for that a long time ago. But how better to gain trust than to let someone cut your hair in high school when your appearance is so like crucial.
Exactly.
I don't remember the stopping for frozen yogurt, but I do remember the rides home, and you were part of a group of people that I always felt more comfortable with the older kids in high school, and so you were a couple grades ahead of me and had better musical taste than most of my friends that were my contemporaries in my grade. Did you think that we had some sort of connection over music?
Yeah, I've always felt connected to you and your family. And I guess it is the music that we always connected with together.
Did you feel like, well, for me, I moved to Fort Worth from a more metropolitan area or more metropolitan neighborhood, more diverse neighborhood from Houston, and immediately felt like I was kind of moving back in time when I moved to basically a place where all of the schools that we went to were surrounded by cattle pastures.
Right, cow pastures.
Cow pastures, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Same.
So I feel like it was stepping back into a cultural space that, well, maybe it was not stepping back, but it was just a different demographic and more conservative.
Right.
We were, I think, culturally motivated in a place that stifled any kind of rock and roll lifestyle that I definitely wanted to live. I remember moving into our neighborhood and the cable provider refused to carry MTV.
Right.
Which was my life in the early 80s. I was an obsessive just sponge for anything musical, you know, I was a nut, and I felt like a little lost. Did you feel like where we lived? I mean, it was. I mean, Fort Worth is the nickname is Cowtown.
Yes, and I felt a little picked on at times, and you know, different from everyone. But I think that that just makes you more interesting. Maybe that's why we're so interesting.
We're interesting,
right?
Ah. Well, don't let me get a big head over that. Do you remember like we met through theater arts? Is that it?
I think I saw you. I saw you, and maybe I don't really know. I think you just needed a ride home.
Well,
so then we became friends.
Yeah, okay. Well, the necessity is the mother of our relationship, so that's fine. But I think growing up where we did in kind of a cultural dearth, do you think it was do you think it pushed us to be a little bit more
yes.
Do you, okay, pushed us.
Yes.
You feel like it pushed us a little bit further to further away from the sticks.
Being the same.
Further away from Friday night cow tipping parties.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever go out to like the back 40 with people and party?
I remember being there a couple of times.
In the cow pasture?
Yeah.
I never did that.
I wasn't. Nobody wanted to talk to me. I think I was there.
Well,
a couple of times.
So, do you, was there anything that you felt like, what did you feel like growing up and going to school in like the outskirts of, you know, a conservative city?
Well, I've always felt different and just looking for something more interesting to do. And I guess I felt like an outcast. And what about you and your family? How did you guys all end up being so musically, like having such great taste and, you know, your background? Tell me about your parents.
I think taste is subjective, obviously, but my growing up, my parents, they bought me Kiss records when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and that had a big influence on me. I remember them going to a Mexican border town and buying like a Mexican guitar for me, and then I really would play my Kiss records in my room, and I remember them kind of peeking in on me, jumping up and down on my bed, you know, feigning playing guitar, and me being really embarrassed that they were getting a kick out of that. But really, my dad was a professional surfer before there was such a thing as being a professional surfer. I was born on the coast in Corpus Christi, and my mom, she had really good musical taste. I remember going through her record collection, and I guess around 1980, found out honestly about MTV and really never stopped watching and digesting that until I moved to Fort Worth in fifth grade. I guess I was 10 years old, and I had a lot of that taken away from me. And so I leaned on skateboarding, and I remember being really obsessed with skateboarding and I remember an issue in Texas Monthly where it was a cover story of this girl who was a DJ at this community radio station in Dallas called KNON, and she was this cowpunk girl named Shaggy. That was her name, and she had a skateboard, and I had no idea that there was a radio station that would cater to something that I was interested in. I mean, she seemed like the coolest thing in the world, and I remember that specific night trying to get the frequency from so far away from Dallas in northeast Fort Worth that it barely came in, but when it did, I specifically remember hearing something that I'd never heard before and putting in a cassette into the cassette recorder, because that's how we used to, you know, steal MP3s back in our day, was to put in a cassette and just record stuff off the radio. It just so happened to be a Husker Du retrospective, which they ended up being a super influential band for me. And I remember having that cassette in my 20s, when I worked for a record label in Austin, and, you know, the guitar player for Husker Du, Bob Mould, living in the neighborhood and being friends with some of the people at the small record label and coming by the office, and I was the only one there, and having this really influential, like, hero just hang out with me in a, you know, 8x8 little office, and us exchanging records was it was something that was I'm very fortunate to have found a community radio station that spoke to me and kind of guided me when, you know, we didn't have college radio in Fort Worth.
We used to listen to KNON all the time.
But we didn't even have record stores. And then you and I, after high school, or actually maybe during high school, we both got jobs at record stores.
Record stores.
And so as far as me and my family, the way that worked, well, first of all, I'm the oldest out of three children. My younger brother is 7 years younger than me. I have a younger sister that's almost another 7 years. She's like 6.5 years younger than me. And I read that if you have about 7 years in between siblings, that each sibling kind of grows up as an only child. But I know my little brother he looked up to me naturally.
Yes.
And so he always tried to come along on trips to a skate park or something like that. And when he got old enough to go to shows, that was when, you know, I tried to make sure that he was safe, because I knew he had a long drive back from Dallas. And then, you know, we were both kind of interested I wanted to be in a rock and roll band more than anything, but I didn't have the either the talent or the discipline to go through with it, and I just ended up deciding to book shows and really try to push my friends that were talented and in the music field. And then it just seems like he kind of ended up doing a lot of the same things, and now he still books shows in Fort Worth. I still book shows occasionally in Dallas, and it's funny that I was out of the house before my little sister was even in grade school. But I find it really funny that, or unique, that Katie, my sister, is the only one that actually went through with it, and she actually makes a living as a musician, and she's a brilliant pianist and singer. But I feel like there's a big distance in between the three of us.
Yeah.
Because there's just a big age difference.
Right. And I have my brother is 6 years older than me, and I'm the youngest of four siblings.
Opposites attract.
Yeah. and I do feel the same, that we're very separate, but then he has, well, all of my siblings have helped me so much along. Like, I know that you've helped yours and influenced and yeah, so, but I'm the youngest.
I think I didn't realize that I had the influence that I had on them until other people said, hey, you know, your brother really looks up to you.
Of course.
And so I felt this incredible burden to be a good influence on him when you're running, like, when I opened up Mad Hatters in Fort Worth and I was booking shows and I was, you know, in a world where there's a lot of drinking and drug abuse, I felt a really, really strong urge to shield him from that, which was probably misguided and hopeless, because everybody has to grow up and he had to learn, you know,
right,
what he could handle and what he couldn't handle.
Right.
And so there were a lot of times where I didn't for me, I didn't really start drinking until I was 25. But, you know, when I was 25, he was around the age of 18. He was at the age where he could just get into shows. And so I would make sure that I was on the other end of the bar and have my beer around my back and tried to hide it as much as I could. But there is a kind of almost a parenting position. And now that I'm a dad I have a teenage son, Evan, I find myself, when I talk to my little brother, I find myself referring to him either as my son's name, just because I feel it's like it's the same relationship almost.
Interesting.
Well, just if he's doing something and you know, I'm frustrated with him, you know,
accidentally.
I'll say my son's name to my little brother.
Yeah. Well, so I was thinking, and I know you've talked your way into some really interesting, strange places, or just shows, and just by saying things. And
can I
what
tell
is
you,
your biggest
can,
tip?
So this is good. I have the philosophy that if you want to get into an event, the first thing, I mean, it's confidence. Act like you're supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
It really helps. You and I have gone to music conferences, mm-hmm, and definitely, mm-hmm, sold out shows at South by Southwest,
yes,
many, many years, and it's so frustrating to sit there and wait in line and think that you're going to miss your favorite band from Germany or somewhere or Australia,
right,
that's never going to come back again. And the thing to do is to make sure that you have a microphone cable or a box, a box with some cables in it, and go up to the door and say, like, these were left in the van, I have to get up to the stage. That's a good one.
Just act like you know what you're doing. And
I think that's essential.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, very selfish and something that I try not to. I still do it. I'm sorry.
I didn't even think of it being selfish.
So one of
it is though.
It is,
because there are lots of people out there.
But if it was, I on the other hand, I think if it wasn't me, it was going to be somebody else that would do it. So,
right.
And I had good intentions.
Yeah.
I remember one specific time, there was a Scottish after party, and this is going to be bad. I literally had a promoter that I'd toured and road managed in Europe, and one of the promoters from Glasgow was in the car with me and a couple other musicians from Texas, and we all knew that we weren't going to get into this, and we pulled up anyway, and we're just going to see what we were going to do, whether we were going to jump the fence or not. My friend in the front seat, we pulled up, and he was demonstrative. He said, "All right, we go up to the door. None of you guys say anything. Just let Robertson talk." And he put me on the spot. I had no idea. He didn't tell me anything about it. So I just said, okay. And it came to me. It was like, walked up to the door guy, and this is not going to sound good, but I said in my worst impression of a Scottish accent.
What does that sound like?
Listen, mate. Listen, I got no identification, mate. I'm the manager from Franz Ferdinand. I got no identification. And the guy, so I'm trying to say that I'm the manager from Franz Ferdinand and that I have no ID. And the door guy, the poor door guy, was probably hired that day. And just because he was a big guy, was so confused, and he was probably thinking, "I'm just from Texas. I don't know what language you're speaking, but y'all go ahead and go on in and have a good time." And those cutting corners things are they're really essential. If you don't have genuine talent, you've got to cut some corners somewhere, I think.
I see.
So,
well, I feel like if you really want to be somewhere or you want something, that it'll magically happen for you. And that's just, I mean, it does. I feel like it does.
Well, give me an example of how that's happened for you.
Oh, when we went down to South by Southwest one time and we had no idea how to get in to see Tom Waits, or we had no idea where he was playing. We just got in the car and drove down there. Me and Eric Hermeyer.
Oh, yeah. Your old boyfriend.
Yeah. We just drove down there and just somehow just ended up in the right place and got in line, got tickets, and it was amazing. And everybody wanted to get in. And when we were, walking up, people were offering $400 for tickets, and it was just cool.
Isn't that the best feeling?
Yeah.
I think we're talking about a lot of selfish behavior.
Oh, well, when you want something, you want something,
I
right?
guess that's true. I don't
so
know.
So you figure it out. Well, I think that the universe kind of works in your favor. I feel.
I'm being too hard on us.
Yeah.
But do you feel like, okay, so we're both kind of culture vultures, right?
Right.
We're kind of swimming upstream from where we came from in Fort Worth, and I think do you feel like we're both casualties of dying industries, like record stores. And we're working at record labels because we both I think we both would have stayed working at record stores
forever.
A lot longer, and you kind of did.
Oh, I worked at a record store longer than you,
yeah.
And then I worked at a bookstore, and
which sold
definitely
records.
That's a dying industry all around. Yes, so but I love music. I love being in record stores, and I love the people who come in and the people who work there. And I love to work at my friend's record store in Fort Worth. Sometimes I just go help them out.
It's a thing where we still have to kind of eke out a living, and so
yeah,
I had to kind of switch gears from working at record stores to doing I did some music writing. I really thought when I was 23 and 24 that I really had a soapbox to stand on, and I was putting out a music magazine and
right.
and you know, eking out, yeah, doing that, and then eventually managing bands and touring, road managing, just anything that I could do to be close to that thing that I loved. But at some point, I feel like I had to reinvent myself because the industry's kind of dried up. Do you feel like the same way? And is
right
because you have your own. Tell me more about your new endeavor.
Well, I've had a ice cream business called Starry Ice Cream, and I make my own ice cream and I take it out in a cart and do pop ups and events, and it's been just something that I've always wanted to do. It's a labor of love. I love ice cream. And so I just wanted to make it. So I did.
It cracks me up. When I found out that you were doing it, I had no idea. And I had no idea how you started. I had no idea how you... And you've become successful enough to the point where people want to actually, like, distribute. And you've made the specific decision. Talk about your decision to not do that. To not carry it in chain stores.
Well, I make it all by myself, and I put it in the containers, and I haven't really gotten to the point where I want to, you know, be hiring more people.
Industrialize your process.
Yeah, and so it's a very small batch. I like to make make three flavors at a time and just make enough that I can sell it to people. And someday maybe I'll figure out how to be distributed in a grocery store or something. I'm just not interested. It's me, and I love making it. And it, to me, it's more about making the ice cream. I love it.
Yeah. Well, there's
like a magical experience for me.
It's tangible. At the end of it, you've got something that you can see.
Yeah.
It's not like me at a call center on the phone. I can't really go home and look at that happy moment.
I need a tip from you. How can I be a better karaoke singer?
Oh, that's a tough one. It's not that tough. So I guess after the music industry part of my life sort of dried up, I decided to I was already doing artwork for bands that I liked, and I knew a little bit about computers, and a friend of mine said, you should just work for, you should work for this tech company. You know enough. And I ended up doing that for 10 years, and it was soul sucking. Mm-hmm. I still like to go and have fun. And one of my friends and I would go to karaoke bars, and it was the only way that we could kind of fulfill that need to kind of be, you know, like a rock star. And so I guess when we started doing karaoke, Good Luck Karaoke, about 10 years ago, we wanted it to be something that the good thing about karaoke, I think by definition, it means translation, it means poor pitch. And so it's just the only thing is just to really kind of believe that you're doing a great job, regardless of whether you're a good singer or not, and just enjoy it if that's possible. And sometimes it's good to have, you know, a backup dancer, which I like to do. Yeah, I like to play air guitar a lot behind some of our performers. I think that, and I like to sing backup. I like to be involved.
Right.
So
it's more fun than any regular karaoke bar ever. It's like a party. It's like a party.
Well, that's what we wanted it to be. Mm-hmm. We wanted it to be. We wanted it to be that. And mm-hmm. and I don't know if. You know, but like we have to come up with a different costume theme every week, and so there's actually a lot of work that goes into it. And if you want to know how to be better at it, I don't know. You just keep doing it. If it's...
Oh, practicing?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty weird. Okay. Yeah. Why not?
Sure. Okay.
But that's sadly, I can't believe that that's become my, you know, kind of my lot in life, isn't it? Is when people ask me what I do, when I go meet a girlfriend's parents for the first time, what do you do? And she says, oh, he's a karaoke DJ. He's a 45-year-old karaoke DJ. And they're like, of course you brought this guy home to us.
Oh, come on. Does it matter?
But I do find, well, I do find that I'm relying on myself rather than a corporation has been both scary and important and essential.
Yeah, and, I understand.
And your ice cream business, like I can't tell you how shocked, well, not shocked, but yeah, really surprised and yeah, really, really happy for you.
Yeah.
For that. But
well, things happen in your life and you just end up getting to the point where you just say, why not? Why not do what I want?
It's a huge risk. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people that are our age and maybe younger in this, like in the climate where industries are dying left and right. Oof.
Exactly.
We have to have something like that.
And you can't order ice cream on Amazon.
Oh, no?
Well, you can. I mean, but no.
Not handmade ice cream, no.
Well, no, you can, but it's complicated.
What do you think?
You can't meet me.
Is there anything you're looking forward to as far as your work, your career, mm-hmm, your relationships? Are you ever going to own a home? I don't think I'm ever going to own a home.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I don't know if that's part of the American dream anymore. What is the American dream for you right now? Yeah.
I don't know if we know what that is. I mean, I think we have our own dreams, but we're our own dreamers. So my American dream is different. You know, I just want to find happiness doing something that I love. I don't want to be stuck in some job and, you know, falling into all of the expected ways of living, you know. I want to do things that are fun and interesting to me.
Did you ever want to move and leave Fort Worth? Did you ever want to leave and live somewhere else?
Yeah, I would move to New Orleans in a heartbeat. But, I mean, I don't want to leave my family. I love my family. So everyone around and just I also really like Fort Worth.
It has its charms. It got a lot better once I left.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Not because you left. Yeah. I'm noticing your Excalibur hat. Is that a reference to when you pulled the sword out of the stone?
It's similar to that. Yes.
Was a gift. Was that you?
It was a gift. Yes. Yeah, in Camelot. That Sir Tom Warwick had that special moment. Man.
Congratulations.
Thanks, yeah. And congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I'm so happy that you drove all the way from Fort Worth to meet me to do this.
Anytime. You're my brother.
I feel like you're my sister. Anybody that cuts my hair when I'm 14 or 15 years old is gonna have that moment forever.
Yeah.